Welcome to Season 2 of On the Inside, a deep dive into the variety of introvert experience. I'm LaToya.
And I'm Stacey. This season, we are exploring introversion across cultures.
We're excited to have you join our conversation.
We are very excited to welcome our guest, Ansgar, today. Ansgar lives in Munich, where he studied psychology and completed a PhD in the so-called learning sciences. He works as a researcher doing research on various topics with a through line of interest in psychometrics, and is currently working on early childhood prevention in a German federally funded research institute. Ansgar describes himself as a multi-nerd who is unironically enthusiastic about lots of nerdy topics and also just nerd communities itself. He's most involved in a community calling themselves Nerd Fighters. Ansgar loves all kinds of games and is meddling in card game creation. He tries his best to stay in contact with both local and international friends around the world. Ansgar, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're excited you're here. I've got the first question. If you could sum up your experience as an introvert up to this point in your life, in five words or less, how would you describe it?
Sure. So I'm not very good at being concise. I cheated a bit by like choosing five words and then fitting some like sub themes under them that I can go into. But the five words I have are imagination, reflection, stimulation, struggle, and community. And yeah,
you can say more words now.
I'm excited about this because I feel like this gives a different flavor than a lot of the other intros we've had, so I'm excited for this exploration. Please elaborate.
So like the imagination part is like I think one role that like my introversion played for me was like kind of sometimes in my family growing up as a coping mechanism. So I was in like growing up in a house that I wasn't like super bad or anything. So I don't want to give the wrong impression here, but I wasn't always like very happy there. Like my parents didn't get along well. Like, so they were like fighting a lot. And so I think often for me, like kind of like retreating a bit in myself and like engaging more with my introverted side, like, and especially like with my own imagination was an important part of that, to like deal with that. And also just, I think like that developed like a part of me that was like very creative and like, I got myself interested in like, oh, like I came up with an idea, like I want to like create something and like, and then I worked on that. So that's the first part, the imagination part. Then I think that another very important role that also kind of like goes along with the where I feel like I see the benefits of like the more introverted part of myself is like this reflection part or like learning part, where like I really like to think through like interactions I had, for example, and like go over them again in my mind, and then it's not always helpful, but sometimes it is. And like, sometimes you learn from something and you can I said maybe this thing that maybe like could have been misunderstood there. And like, maybe I can, next time I'm engaging with like in a similar situation, I can like do it better maybe. And also like, yeah, I think that's like the good basis for learning also for me, like just like reflecting about things and maybe recognizing, oh, that's something I don't know enough about. So like, I love to that. Like, if I have the time, like, just sit down, Google a bit over a topic I'm interested in, and like, just by myself, go into that. And I think that's easier for me to do, like, tapping into like that introverted side. And I think that also like has what like people before in your podcast mentioned, like this regeneration side of tapping into that introverted side to like regenerate from interactions. And then like kind of like these first 2 points, imagination, reflection, kind of sometimes I feel like are kind of like pitted against, I don't know if that's the right word, but like on the other hand, like there's sometimes a problem I see with this more introverted side of me, which is that I need also external stimulation with, so I think like sometimes I can get too lost in my own thoughts. And so it's really good to like talk them, like say them out loud to like other people and then like hear back what they have to say about them. And also like, yeah, also just like, is it sometimes is a challenge, right? Like you need to have other people to challenge your thoughts sometimes. And like, because you like have an idea in your mind like how something is, and then somebody tells you, especially people with like different backgrounds, right? With like, I'm a white man, so like I definitely have a lot of privilege, and like sometimes I don't see the perspective of others. So I think that's sometimes like and that's kind of leads into the next word, like the struggle I sometimes have. Like I see this, like on the one hand, how like I'm benefiting from these like more introverted sides of me, but then I also see like, I also sometimes need to tap in these more extroverted sides of me to like get something that I'd be missing otherwise. And then, yeah, that sometimes is like, then leads to this kind of struggle where like, I kind of would like to just be alone at home, but I know like this going to like this event or like the semester abroad I did in Chapel Hill, like I was horribly afraid of doing that before I went, but like there was this part of me inside of me where I was like, I think you will like doing it at the end, and you will benefit from this and like gain something from it, and like, and then like, yeah, I had to like have these two sides like fighting in myself with it. And so, yeah, that is sometimes also part of my, like, yeah, the experience of my introverted side is this struggle against this other side of me. And then I think the last word I choose, community, is kind of like how, like finding certain communities in my life helped me to like deal with this struggle a lot, because like and that's something maybe we can get more into later, that like, especially like in a lot of like nerd communities, what drew me into them was that I kind of found ways there where I could like, both of these sites could be kind of like served at the same time, or like both of them could be served like really well without there being like such a struggle, without there being like this like, oh, expectation of like you have to have like, right, in our society there's often an expectation you have to engage with others a lot and like in certain ways also. And I think like in nerd communities, what I often experience there, they're more open about like engaging with others in like different ways, and like in ways that like more suited also to my introverted side. And that I think helped me a lot in my life and became like more comfortable with like arranging these two sides, because like I don't like fully identify as an introvert, but I'm also definitely not like fully an extrovert. I'm like somewhere in the middle, and like seeking out communities where I feel like I can balance this in a good way, it really helped me a lot.
I really love like you highlighting different parts, the different parts that we need, the different parts that others bring out in us, you know, that balance of strengths and how, you know, like I'm always fascinated with how like every strength is also a weakness, you know, and it really has to do with finding that balance. And I hear you saying that like finding those communities where there's not that expectation of how things should be, or that communities where you kind of have an affinity, a common experience or shared, it sounds like that acceptance and, you know, appreciation for the strengths maybe also creates a safe space to, you know, not have that need for balance be a struggle, but be maybe more of a growth opportunity. Is that, you know, does that speak to what you've experienced?
Yes, I think so. I still remember, like, when I was little, like, I always found this idea so strange that people would meet just to talk, right? Like, you meet up with a friend, like, in a cafe just to talk with them. Like, I always feel like how's that supposed to work? And that's, right, that's, like, one of the, like, standard ways of interacting kind of in our society, right? And, like, and I think, like, and for example, like what draws me, for example, into like board games, like playing board games, right? It's kind of like a structured interaction, right? Like there's like kind of like, yeah, I mean, there's literally rules for like how you're supposed to interact, like at least in the game, and you can do that. But then also, of course, if you meet to play a game, there's also like a little bit, you talk a little bit before the game, during the game, after the game, and it's just, but like, if you want to, you can like focus on the game and you can like in like turn up or down the engaging with the others how you're suited also on that day, right? Like, so if on that day you feel more like this need to like, oh, I need some like more exchange with other people, so you can do that. If you feel like more like, oh, today I just rather want to focus on this like shared thing we're doing and like not so much on the other thing, that's also possible. And so you can like gain different things from it. Like, I think that's kind of what you hinted at, I would imagine with like growth thing, like, right, like you can get from the interaction what you need at that moment, and maybe also like ease you into a little bit like the parts of interaction that are normally harder for myself, and then that way maybe like lead to growth. Like, for example, like when I was in Chapel Hill for that semester abroad, like I, like one of my main group of interaction was the board game club, and it was,
yeah.
And I think like having a place there where I felt comfortable also made it easier with like other aspects of life there to like feel comfortable, because I know like, oh, I have this one good experience and place and group of people, which like then brings you in a mindset of like, oh, maybe this whole thing of being here and living here and doing this is like a good idea after all. And like, and that makes you easier then also to engage with like people at the School of Social Work, or like in the academic context, or like also like the aspects of like organizing your life in a different country. So yeah, I think that definitely, I think, has what you said, like this growth aspect to it, that like having like kind of this like secure anchor and like secure form of interaction in one area then like helps you also to like branch out in like other parts.
That makes so much sense to me. And I'll just add for context, because I didn't explain this in your, yeah, in your bio, is that you and I met in that semester that you had abroad in Chapel Hill that was not abroad for me, which was,
yes,
really fun, because I also studied abroad. So it was cool, yeah, to meet someone else on their study abroad experience. And yeah, I hear you saying that was a real stretch and growth opportunity for you, and that, you know, there are these ways that helped you get comfortable and enter into that. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I might have missed some great experiences that had nothing to do with like the board game club, but that I were only able to do because of I also had that club, and like that kind of, yeah, that kind of like, which was for me kind of like a safe space. Yeah.
I like the idea of like having that anchor was kind of as a starting point. And I feel like that's something that's come up with kind of past guests, is like there's some sort of activity or something that that grounds them. Mm-hmm. That then from that place, then they can kind of stretch more.
I'm honestly grateful that you gave that description of the role of games and how they facilitate and are that safe space for you. Cause as someone who personally, I'm that person that doesn't understand games, and I'm like, can we just sit and talk? Like, why would we go out and play games when we could just connect and sit and talk with each other? Mm-hmm. That was a real gift to me in your description of like, oh, that makes so much sense though. Like, I get that. Mm-hmm. I've been in the social dance, like Latin dance community, for a long time. And I realized that that's exactly what it is for me, is like We're here, we've got a way of interacting that doesn't require, you know, kind of that small talk and building that the whole way. It's like a chance to be with people with kind of some known rules, but creativity within that. And it sounds like, you know, whether it's games, whether it's dance, whether there are probably so many different things, ways we need that and do that as humans.
Yes, exactly. And I think what you're saying, that points, I think, to an important aspect that I think sometimes gets lost, that often I think we like conflate like being together with others with like interacting directly with others by like talking with them. And that I think those two things do not necessarily have to happen together, right? Like one of the things that I did in another group of friends, we are also all very much like from a nerdy background and all very much identify as nerds, was that when one friend said, oh, like I'm having a hard time ahead and like for various like health reasons and stuff. And so the others of us get together and think like, oh, what can we do? And we came up with this idea of setting up like a fixed video call room where people could go into and basically kind of like stream for other people. So like do activities and other people could just join silently. So like somebody would, for example, play a video game or like sort through like their pin collection. That was one friend did that. And then other people could just join that and be there, but there was no expectation of interacting because the idea was that friend who was going through that hard time, we knew that like she would still appreciate being with us, but that it would cost her a lot of energy to interact with us and like talk about something with her, and that might be too much for her. And I think recognizing that we still have this need sometimes to just be in the company of people, but not necessarily have the energy to then also interact with people, and creating situations where that is possible, I think is very important. And at least in my experiences, I found that easier in like nerdy communities and spaces because it's more accepted there to like engage in ways that we normally don't see like in society as that. And then on top of that, kind of like this structured things where like it helps, I think, for like a lot of introverts and also like for me when I'm in my introvert mindset, it helps me to know what to expect from an interaction I'm going into. And so like, as you said, for example, with the dancing, right? Like if you go dance, you know, oh, like roughly this is how the evening will go, right? And right. I think that makes it easier than sometimes, at least for me, like to bring up the energy and engage and go there and do it. And as opposed to maybe like going to a party where I don't exactly know like how the evening will go and how like what the certain steps throughout the evening will be, which to me can be harder.
Yeah. Oh, that makes so much sense to me. I love all these connections, and I feel like I'm already like learning and reflecting a lot from what you're sharing, even about that presence, because I totally relate to just wanting to be with people, and yet being with your people is kind of harder in this globalized world. Like it's so much easier to find your tribe, but it's not easy to just be present with them when, you know, you don't necessarily live close together. And I love, you know, that kind of honoring of that need and finding creative ways to meet that. That's cool. Well, before we move on to kind of other questions about introversion showing up in your own life, we understand that you feel very passionately about framing introversion as a spectrum and not a binary, and that you've learned a lot about the evidence to support that stance, as well as like which personality tests are more evidence-based. And just wondering if you could share a bit more about this, just kind of the spectrum and what you've learned.
Oh, absolutely. That is one of my favorite things to talk about. And please stop me if it gets too excessive at any point. So the starting point for that was just back when I studied psychology at university, we learned, on the one side, we learned a lot about tests. We had like I was having at least like two classes, I think, where like most of the time we were just looking at tests and like reading through their manuals and like talking about them, what is good about them, what is maybe not so good about them, what are the uses for them. And then also like from the more like theoretical point of view, learning about like how with a lot of things, not just personality tests, it's better to like imagine them as like a continuum instead of like two like sides that are like completely distinctive. And I think that can apply to a lot of things. Like you're not just like good at something or bad at something, like, right? There's a continuum of like skill, for example, with like learning a language, for example, or like, and I think too often we just think about like, oh, you're just good at something or just bad at something. And like, we don't see these nuances, or like also with like with political opinions or something, that like we all think, oh, you have to be on this side or this side. But like, maybe there's like, well, maybe I feel myself somewhere in the middle ground. Like I can, and so I think there's, and the thing is, if you use measurement instruments, that's leading back to that psychology part and the test part. If you use measurement instruments for any of these topics, that allow for measuring these things on a continuum. So like if you, ask questions in a way where you let people give them more than just two options, you give them maybe like at least five options to rate something, or like you even have like a scale from like 0 to 100 or whatever. And you then time and again, like when I looked at the research, you often see that if you give people that opportunity, you will end up with like some kind of bell curve, like some kind of normal distribution of data. And with a lot of people in the middle. And that's the same with personality traits. So there are personality tests. So one of the most well-known would be the Big Five personality test, which does have its own problems. But the good thing is that it does measure personality traits more on a continuous scale. So it gives you, like, I think the most common form has like, I think, like always like five options when you answer something. And then with it also asks a lot of questions. So you can like then over calculating an average, you can get like a continuous distribution. And you see, for example, they do also have this dimension of like extroversion and introversion. And if you measure that, most of the people will end up in the middle of the spectrum. So you have like this bell curve with a lot of people in the middle. And on top of that, that's also very important from a psychometric point to understand. There's also always measurement error in tests. So like they will never be able to put you down on the continuum exactly where you are on the continuum. So there might be like a point on the continuum where in reality you are, but the test will be imperfect. So it might places you a little left or right on that continuum. Mm-hmm. And that means if you have like a trait like introversion, extroversion, where a lot of people are in the middle, and the tests are not exactly able to point you to a place, that means that just by design, if a test forces you into one of two categories, like either being introverted and extroverted, that by design, a lot of people will be classified into the wrong category, because they will be close to the middle, but because the test is not perfect, they just like switch over the border one direction or the other. So I think that's kind of like important to understand, like from the psychometric side, and that's what I learned at university, and that opened my eyes on that. And that is not to say that for some people, like this categorization will still be correct, right? Like even in a normal distribution, you have like people very far to the left and very far to the right. And for them, it's not a problem. And that's also normally, of course, the people who feel most passionately about that trait, right? Like if you are like very extroverted, you will feel probably like more passionate about like calling yourself an extrovert, like than if you like slightly to the more towards the extroverted side. And so I think that's maybe makes it a bit unfair for like the tests that advocate for like a more nuanced approach, because there are not a lot of people like advocating for that. So that's kind of, I think, like why I feel like I want to do that and like explain that. And so the MBTI, especially why I got so passionate about that is that, first of all, I actually get to read the original manual of the MBTI while I was at university. We had like a library of tests at university, and that was one of them. And I got selected to present it in class. So I had to read through the manual. And also, I was kind of shocked, to be honest, because it's like from a psychometric point, it's just really bad. Like they make like some really... Like I was like a student back then, but I could see like this was not well constructed. Like they make some like just like direct mistakes in the manual when they describe like the data they used to collect to validate the test. And I was like, I was going to my professor and I was like, can that be true? Like that, and he said, yes, like that's they actually did these mistakes in constructing the test. And so I knew from that the test was like not great, like from just like from the way it constructed. And then also has this inherent design flaw of putting people into categories. That is true for all the tests that do that. And what's special about the MBTI, why I'm so passionate about that, is that it's actually used in a lot of like serious contexts. Like I'm not sure entirely if that's still true today, but like 5 or 6 years ago, I think like, for example, the US military was, or like some branches of it at least, was still using it in some parts. Some like big companies were using it to like either in the selection process or also like in the internal, like which roles to assign to which people things. So like real life decisions, like important decisions are based on the MBTI. And knowing its flaws that are behind it, and also knowing that there are personality tests, in my opinion, that are better than that like do not have these flaws, I became very passionate in like telling people about why I think this test shouldn't be used in serious contexts. And I think with the MBTI, it's so popular in like pop culture and like so well known that people just think it's good because it's so well known. And also like you have to pay a lot of money if you actually want to be allowed to use it. And that also I think often leads to the fact, oh, if it's so expensive to be able to use it, then it must be good, right? And so I think all of that led to the fact that a lot of people have a lot of trust in it that I think is misplaced. And yeah, so I try to talk with people about that topic and explain to them why I think that's not okay. Yeah. Sorry for that rant, but yeah.
No, don't apologize at all. We're nodding being like, yeah.
it brings up kind of how we got to starting this podcast in the first place, which was just in our own discussions and then looking up kind of the definition of what an introvert is. It was very unflattering in its description and it didn't feel true for us, but it's like, you know, I hear you saying like that the test kind of puts people in one box or the other, and real life is really not like that. And I feel like we've in these conversations have been trying to kind of tap more into kind of what the variety of experiences are and just show like an introvert is not just one thing.
Yes. And I think what you're saying is a problem that's not just a problem with the MBTI, but with a lot of personality tests, like even sometimes with the like something like the Big Five that I would endorse more as a personality test. When you read through this, the descriptions of like the endpoints of the spectrum, you still feel like, oh, this one endpoint seems to be more desirable than the other endpoint. But I think then this problem gets just bigger if you put people into boxes, because right, like if you put them just into the one thing or the other, then you're saying you are just that, you're entirely that, right? And you are entirely that end of the spectrum that maybe sounds a little bit less desirable. But if you have like more of a continuum, at least, like, right, it kind of, I think, makes it easier than if you like explain the results to a person, for example, for a test, it makes it easier to like not make them feel like this is like defining you entirely like this, and like there's more nuance to it.
Yeah, to your point, you know, like I think, you know, you were saying that if you're farther to the extremes on certain traits, that you're more likely to feel passionate about that as an identity. And I think layered onto that, right, is kind of to what you were saying just then, like if, even if you're on like a little bit, you're not on an extreme, but you're kind of a little toward the side that it is not as favored, not as highly valued or admired in a context. And I think that that does also push you to feel a bit more passionate about that side of your identity. I mean, I don't consider myself an extreme introvert, but I am very aware, or at least I feel how that set of traits and that side of me and a lot of people are misunderstood, as evidenced by that definition, right? Though we looked at the beginning and is labeled sort of not from a place of experience and understanding or nuance, but from the outside, right? From an outside perspective. And so I think the opportunity that we have wanted to take in terms of having these conversations is really giving a voice to what it is like to be an introvert, not so much as a label, but for those of us who identify with a certain experience, within a range of experience, to talk about what that can be like. And, you know, which is a very different thing than adding those labels, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think getting into a mindset where you're even considering that, I think is easier if you're told that the trait is a continuum. Like, for example, like I took the Big Five, like I think 2 or 3 times at university. And like before I took it the first time, I would have guessed that I'm fairly far on the introverted side, like not entirely, but the tests, and every time I did it, placed me like more towards the middle, actually. Mm-hmm. And then that also like made me maybe realize and reflect more about like what maybe are parts of my life where I am actually more extroverted, and realized it a bit more. And I could definitely start seeing that there are sometimes moments where I do become rather extroverted. And like, for example, like I gave a toast at a wedding 2 years ago, where like it evolved partly because of like technical problems. I had to like do some like audience like interaction and stuff, and like I started to enjoy that and like being there, because it was also a context like where I felt comfortable. I think that helped a lot, of course, but like I think that's this benefit of like thinking about things more in terms of a continuum, because it gets you more in a mindset of like, maybe most of the time I'm introverted and like in these contexts, but maybe there's like this area that where I can be like much more extroverted. So for example, I know from a lot of friends that I have like a theater background, more like that, they like, some of them are like in like their daily life more introverted, but then they really enjoy going on stage and like living out that side of them. Yeah.
Well, and I think this is becoming more and more an important conversation in society generally, and it's really challenging for people. Like, I, you know, when thinking about how we have a tendency to add labels that are binary, I think about gender, you know, yes. And I think we're having a reckoning around gender that is really confusing for people who have never questioned gender being a binary. And now people are speaking up and saying, I really don't want to have to choose, or I don't want to have to only claim one part of myself. I want something that's more of an accurate description of who I am. And I think that is turning into a bigger conversation of like, how many labels can you have? And, you know, I think there's this opportunity in society for people to really speak up about who they actually are and not only be labeled by other people. And then how do we communicate about that? You know, how do we communicate together about these traits in ourselves, these things that we notice, these things that are real to our experience, but that we should get to communicate about honestly instead of having someone else just make assumptions.
Yes. Oh, that all these are great points. Like, and I think what I found interesting is that I think learning at university about like how introversion, extroversion is more of a continuum definitely made it much easier for me to like think about gender as a continuum in general. Like a lot of things I think I learned about in psychometrics helped me to understand completely unrelated topics in like different areas in a much more nuanced way. And I think that I found that really interesting, like how like this like statistical thing like that's completely unrelated suddenly makes you like understand a different topic better. But also I think it is, and I think that's important to recognize, is you talked about the importance of like talking about these things, and it's I think important to recognize that it does make it harder, I think, to some degree to think about things in continuums, right? It is, I think, at least that is my opinion. I had some interesting discussions about that at university, but at least my opinion, I think it's less cognitively stressful for most people to just think in these boxes and like, oh yeah, like that person is an introvert. So like, I myself am an introvert, checkbox. I don't have to think about it ever again. The thing is done, right? But like thinking what, oh, maybe like also I can maybe change on that spectrum and like I might not just be this one thing and like maybe I need to find a word for that, like, right? Like I think a guest of your podcast used the word ambivert. That might is not a word that's like known to a lot of people because like we normally only talk about introverts and extroverts, so you have to like put in the effort to maybe like find a word that describes you better. I think in the end it's worth it, that effort, and it makes life so much richer, and especially for the people who always felt that they do not fit neatly into one of these boxes, it's like so important and for them, and it's also I think important for us then to engage with them and allow that for them. But I think it is important to recognize that I think often it is more work to think in these continuums, and also like recognize that for people who might not have a lot of experience thinking in these continuums, it's hard for them to start doing that.
Yeah, I think it's hard because we've kind of been conditioned for so long to think of ourselves as just these boxes that you have to check off, and they're everywhere. Like if you want to get a passport so you can travel, if you want to apply for a job, even if you want to go to school, you know, like you have to identify yourself by race, by gender, by, you know, like all of these constructs that have been created so long ago that we just kind of continue to accept them as is. And it's kind of now that we're questioning them and that we're adding more categories in, and it's almost like, should we be adding more categories, or is there another solution to like just saying like we're gonna go category less and just people can just be whoever they are? And you know, I think that would throw us into total chaos if we'd say like let's just take away all the checkboxes. But I don't know, I don't have an answer, but just it's something to think about.
Yeah, I think, you know, just thinking about it, just engaging in the discussion, you know, I think to the point of like work, right? Like, it is more work for people who have not felt constrained by those boxes. But I think now we're being confronted, you know, very importantly, you know, hearing from people for whom it's always been work. Trying to fit in those boxes have been work, are work, are always work. And, you know, hearing those voices that say, hey, this isn't easy for me. This actually makes life a lot worse. You know, then it becomes that discussion of like, oh, what has made life easier, you know, or who's been easier for me and kind of, you know, slid under the radar. That's not true for everybody. And then we can have that discussion and, you know, and we can honor that in this discussion here, we're all cisgender people. And, you know, being able to acknowledge that and that privilege and that perspective and not knowing all of the experiences that other people have, but honoring the importance of that discussion and recognizing, you know, that and many other ways that it is important to realize that things are not as simple as the binary. And what does that mean? What should that mean? Why do we describe ourselves the way that we do? And why do we ascribe some important, you know, importance to some like descriptors, you know, like you don't have a checkbox for like, what's your favorite food? You know, like, it's like, you don't have to put that on your passport, right? Like there's certain things that we claim importance to and not others. And why, you know, and who has that been useful for is another thing.
Yes. It's
like, who does that benefit? In what ways? And starting to question that.
Great point. And I think you cannot have that conversation without like realizing that categories do have some use. Like they can be in some ways, sometimes you do have to make a decision that is binary. And so you have to decide is like a thing either A or B, even if maybe the thing is not entirely A or B, you have to like, for the purpose of making this decision, I have to treat it like that.
Or even talking about it, like giving it a name at all.
And so I think that's if we would like ignore that part of like the how useful categories can be, I think we would do our disservice in that conversation.
No, absolutely. I'm glad that we can talk about and bring up this non-binary aspect of introversion and extroversion too, because I think we've kind of like talked a little bit about that, but I think this is the first time that we've talked about it directly, and it's really important.
I think that was also important for me to like be very clear about that at in that conversation that it's not a binary for me to like not further like push that idea of like these totally distinct boxes. And I do want to say, like, as a last thing, maybe on that whole test thing, I don't want to take away anybody's like fun quizzes and like whatever, like Hogwarts houses. I like those too. I do a little bit as a form of protest. I do identify with two Hogwarts houses, so like I'm so as to not put my way in it. To put myself just in one voice, like this is all fine, and people can have fun with that, and should have fun with that. It's perfectly fine. You can also sometimes learn interesting things for that, like if you read the description at the end and use it to reflect about yourself. Like even like the MBTI reflection description can be useful for that. It's just that especially with the MBTI, I think the problem is that it is used in like professional contexts where like. Better tools would be available. And I think like sometimes using a test like that in a high stakes decision context can like lead to like real harm being done to real people. And I think that's important to like separate that from like, I'm doing a fun stuff at home with my friends and we all have a laugh about like this pop quiz about something like which character from whatever series I am or whatever.
I appreciate that distinction. And that distinction between, again, labeling someone else and making that decisions based on labeling someone else and putting these boxes versus like, I'll say like, I love the Myers-Briggs, not because I believe in it in any sort of like scientific or, you know, I don't believe others should do it. You know, it's not like this belief about how things should be. I just know that when the first time I heard a particular description of the personality I most identify with, which is the INFP, I read this description and I nearly cried because I had never heard someone describe me in a way that felt so true to myself. And it was one of the times when I felt seen in a way and understood in a way that I hadn't before and kind of less alone. And, you know, if something can do that for you, whatever that is, I think it's just part of a growth process and it's very personal and that's fine. Like I don't really need it to be a valid metric. It just helped me learn a bit about myself in a way that was strengths-based and helped me value what I had to offer in a context in which that's not always easy, right? Mm-hmm. For any of us.
Yeah, that's definitely what it does great. That I do, though, like if you ever get the chance, I think it's really interesting to read also different personality descriptions. And like what I at least found, that might not be true for everyone, I could find myself in like to some degree in like all of the descriptions, which I think goes to show you how at least for me, this like putting things into boxes just does not work. And I think that also shows how what the authors of the test, what they are really great at is making these like great descriptions of personality types, but they're also kind of like written sometimes a little bit like, you know, like as in a horoscope that they're like, have enough vagueness that like kind of everything fits a little bit to you. And when I did this presentation about the test at university, I read through the different things. And I found it really interesting. Like, oh yeah, I can identify with that. And I can identify with that. And like, as you said, like if you use that as a tool for you, as a self to then reflect about that, like either with one description or with multiple descriptions, like where do you find yourself, like where do you feel like a connection, where do you feel like something, oh, I can gain something from that, I learned something about myself, that's great, that's fantastic. I think it's it's just, I think also important to realize that that's part of that is like beautiful like storytelling and not necessarily like sound psychometric testing.
Yeah,
it's kind of almost what we started talking about. Like it's a space of grounding where it's like, oh, I can see myself in this description and like, and that feels comforting in some way, just like kind of if you look up your horoscope or your zodiac sign more so. And then I think there's like numerology and there's all sorts of places where people can go to kind of center themselves around like, okay, this is my starting point and this is a description that feels true to me, and from there I can like kind of branch out.
Yeah, it's important, I think, to note that, to like not phrase these conversations the way that you're like where others feel like you're taking away something from them, right? Like the same with like if somebody really feels super passionate about characterizing themselves as an introvert and nothing else as an introvert, and they gain something from that, I think, great, go for it. There's enough in our society already where like it feels like there's pressure put on you for like not feeling like you can be an unapologetic introvert, right? So like, please don't let that like this talk about like continuums like take that away from you. Like if you feel with that, roll with that. And so I think it's just as humans sometimes tend to do, like, right, like if something works for us, we expect, oh, then it also works for others. And I think that's the part where we need to like make a mental stop and like be like, oh, hold up. Like, nope, this might work for me, but it might not work for others.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I've got the next question. What was it like growing up introverted in your family? And how do you see your experience differing from other more extroverted members of your family or kind of from the family cultures of other introverted friends and acquaintances?
I think that was the question I was most unsure about how to answer when I read about the questions you sent me. I think partly because these days, well, right at the moment, not so much, because I'm kind of to some degree forced to engage with my family because of the care for my mom. But like in general, my biological family does not play that of an important role in my life. Especially as soon as I could choose and I was like more able to like seek out what I would call like chosen family, then those became more important in my life. But I did, thinking about that, I did find like some interesting things. One of them relating back to what I said before is this, I think how my more introverted side definitely helped me in my family as like a coping mechanism sometimes to get through like if there was like some conflict going on in the family, like between my parents, most likely it was helpful to me to like have like being able to like retreat a bit more and like find joy in that side and like doing something for myself by myself. So I think that's definitely something that's important for me in thinking about introversion and my family. I also think like my family didn't have like some like super extroverted people. I think that made it easier to not like being feeling like that is some like my more introverted approach is like something I can't do because there wasn't like that big of a contrast to it. So definitely like my siblings are definitely more extroverted than me, but I think that they more projected that to like the outside by like engaging with friends and like doing things. My sister went into like multiple like exchanges to other countries in school, but like I never felt like I was like felt like forced I was engaged with them or something like I I think there was like not a it was not like a like their more extroverted nature was like a challenge to my more introverted nature. So I didn't feel like that. I do sometimes, what I found interesting, looking back especially, I can see like that my mother, I think, sometimes pushed me to be a little bit more extroverted, like encouraging me to like go to like social events and engage more with people. But like I think she did it in a very nice way and always in a way where I felt like it was coming from a good place that and oftentimes I think like afterwards I would have to agree with her, oh yeah, I actually did like going there, like I did like engaging with people today. And so there's definitely no hard feelings about that. I think it was good for me a lot of times. And I think like I heard like also on the podcast, right, like some of these more stories of like families with like really extroverted members of the family and that it sometimes was complicated for the more introverted families. I do not have that in that experience in my family, probably because like we're not that far apart like from on that spectrum. And also maybe because like we were also just geographically, I was like not close to anybody else in my family except my core family. So of course, like if you do not have a situation where you're like engaging a lot with like grandparents and uncles and aunts and have like giant family meetings all the time, that was not my life growing up. So I think that makes it a bit easier to have this more like introverted side and you play out and not like being challenged.
Yeah, it's interesting how much like contrast plays into our experience of ourselves, especially growing up.
Yeah, like it was never, like I think also because I think partly because like, as I said before, also like this introverted side also often led me to like learn things, especially like more like towards the end of high school, like it allowed me to like, oh yeah, like I really sit down and like learn for school and learn for tests, for example. And of course that's, I think, was seen like as a desirable thing. And so that makes it easier then to like not feeling pressure more towards like a more like extroverted like way of living.
Sounds like you had like enough space to kind of explore yourself and who you are as a person, with a little bit of pushing, you know, sometimes that, even though you maybe didn't initially want that thing, like, it would be like, okay, maybe that wasn't so bad. And that's kind of how you balance things out now, is, you know, kind of that knowing, like, I need to go out to this thing, or I need to interact with people, and you create some structure around that for yourself so that it's manageable. But kind of, that's kind of how you've learned to give yourself that balance.
Yeah, that's a great summary, LaToya. I couldn't have said it that well myself. I think that's exactly it.
It also sounds like culturally, you know, what was held up as success included some more introverted activities of getting involved, you know, academically, and how success wasn't held up as something in contrast to that of being super social and out there or whatever. So it sounds like that was meaningful too, that you, you know, had a niche that fit you pretty well, that was also seen as like, oh, good, he's doing good things.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful in that way, that I would say overall that, like, Germany in general is, like, not super extroverted. So I would say, like, there's, from my experiences in the US, I would say there's definitely a higher expectation in the US of being, like, outgoing and extroverted than compared to Germany. It's not like we don't have that at all. Like, I also, for example, I travel to Japan, and, like, that definitely is even further to that side of, like, it's being okay to be introverted. But, like, I think, like, Germany probably is, like, some kind of, like, in the middle, where, like, it's, you can definitely, I think, get along fairly well with, being more, like, introverted, especially as you said, like, if it's in a, like, framed within a context of, like, you, like, working towards something or learning something, like, there's a very, like subjects at university, like engineering and, like, all of these kind of things are, like, held in very high esteem in Germany, and, like, they are often kind of, I don't think necessarily it has to be that way, but, like, in the common imagination, they're more, like, thought of as, like, subjects that don't necessarily require as much, like, social interaction, and it's okay to, like, be, like, more, like, focused on like one thing, and, like, by yourself, and, like, doing that thing. And I think that overall creates possibilities in German culture, where you can find ways to be introverted without being, like, challenged, like a lot. Yeah.
It is so fascinating, all these layers that we live within, right? Like, our own temperament, and then our family experience growing up, and friends and social circles and the communities we find, and the national culture in which we exist, and then, like, the media culture that's even bigger than our national culture, all these things, all these layers that give us an impression of kind of where we are in the grand scheme of things.
I do also, like, one maybe, like, short observation that I found really interesting, that I don't know if you have made the same experience in the US, but I feel like especially I made that observation here, that, like, once, like, smartphones became a thing, life became definitely much more easier for introverts, because suddenly you could, like, be at places and not have to interact with other people without it being as strange, because you could just look up your phone and do stuff with your phone, and that became, like, a more normal thing. And I found that, like, when I was thinking about, like, this question about, like, how it was, like, being introverted outside my family, that was one thought that came to my mind that I found really interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you in your life made the same observation, that was a great gift to introverts everywhere, the smartphone.
That's an interesting, I haven't heard it put that way before, because that is such an interesting thing that, you know, I guess, like anything, means different things to different people has various impacts on stuff. Because I think so many people are frustrated with the, you know, like this culture now of being out and about and with people, but then on our phones. But yet giving ways, again, like we were saying before, about being together with other people without having to directly interact, you know, can offer some relief and some opportunities that are not quite as overwhelming or draining, maybe for us as more introverted folks. But I can't say that I notice that particular effect for me, just because I think it cuts down on what I'm really there for, which is presence. Even if it's mm-hmm. quiet presence, I think for me, I'm lacking in that sense of presence when people are on their phone. What would you say, LaToya?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about, like, I didn't have a smartphone growing up, you know, and my first phone was at 16, and it was definitely far from a smartphone. And I'm like, now kids are getting them in elementary school, right? And I think it's a blessing and a curse. I think it does make it easier to just be in a space and kind of reduce some of that anxiety that might be coming up. But then I think, you know, I had to be forced, you know, like, to just deal with life in ways that maybe kids don't have to be, you know,
yeah. like,
so they're not, there's certain skills that they're not getting yeah. to build because they don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point yeah. too.
That leads back to what I said before, right? That sometimes it might not be bad to have a little push.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and have to learn what you're capable of or to grow yeah. in those ways. Yeah. yeah. It is such an interesting balance. Well, Ansgar, what is yeah. one thing you wish society understood about introverts if you had to kind of lift up one thing?
So I think the one thing I would mention is that there is basically no such thing as, like, quote unquote, like, the introverts, right? Like, that is, and that if there's a test that wants to tell you that, then, like, at least try to question that. And I think that's the main thing I would love society to understand, that it's not a binary, and that even a lot of people who identify as introverts, still amongst this group, you will find lots of differences between people who are, like, maybe introverted in different situations or in different ways and to a different degree, like all of these nuances that get lost if we just, like, talk about the group of, like, the introverted people or, like, introverts. And I mean, I hope very much that your podcast is, like, serving that function by showing, like, all these different ways that people can be introverts and, like, how, like, very diverse introverts can be.
We hope so too. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I love this conversation. I feel like, you know, lots of good stuff has come out of it. And I think it's really that idea of this binary, like, it's a starting point, but, like, really just reiterating, like, you have to dig deeper once you've got that starting point and really figure out all of kind of who someone is and what they're bringing to the table.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be left with thinking about that too, in terms of, you know, all these things as maybe mixes of traits and tendencies, as opposed to, you know, concrete identities and just all the many aspects of ourselves that make up who we are and how they are not binary and they're not set in stone, but they are real in the sense of what we experience and kind of what makes us similar and different and all that cool stuff.
Yes.
I think I'll also, one other thing I've valued from this conversation too, is I think I've been given a new way to think about what I would maybe name as game culture. I am close with a lot of people who love games, and I'm kind of left out of that particular passion. And I think I've wanted to kind of share in it because I care about so many people who love various forms of games, be it sports or video games or whatever. But the fact that now I can sort of put it in the frame of what I love about dancing is kind of like, oh, okay, I can relate to it a little bit differently, even if it's still abstract. And I thought it was kind of cool to hear the name nerd also attached to cultures in which become safe space for people to be themselves, in inclusive of more introverted traits as well, and those like safe connected spaces. So I appreciated so many things about getting to talk with you today.
Great. I love that. That makes me very happy to hear that. And that point, for example, is something I think that also I only started to realize thinking about these questions and about going to that podcast, that it was not something I had in my mind for like 10 years and was waiting to tell people, but like, yeah, it really took me like this opportunity to think about like, maybe that is one of the things that drew me into that kind of culture.
Very cool. Well, thank you again. This has been great.
Thanks a lot for having me, and good luck for your podcast. It's a great project.
Thanks for listening to On the Inside.
Before we go, show some love for your favorite introvert podcast by following us and leaving us a comment on Facebook or Instagram, which you can find through the link in our show notes.
And remember that even when the world doesn't seem made for you, you were made for the world.